Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to BT's H1 2018-19 results conference call for the first half of the year ended 30th of September 2018. My name is Deborah, and I'm your event manager for today. During the presentation, you will remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time during the call, please key star zero on your phone, and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I would like to advise all parties that the conference is being recorded today, and now I'll hand over to Mark. Thank you, Mark. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Deborah, and welcome everyone. My name is Mark Liddiard from the BT Investor Relations team. Presenting on today's call is Gavin Paterson, Chief Executive, and Simon Lowth, Chief Financial Officer. Also on the call for Q&A are members of our executive committee. Before we start, I'd like to draw your attention to the usual forward-looking statements on slide two and our latest annual report for examples of the factors that could cause actual results to differ from any forward-looking statements we may make. Both the slide and the annual report can be found on our website. With that, I'll now hand you over to Gavin.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for today's call. Before I move to the results, as you know, last week we announced Philip Jansen as BT's new chief executive. I'm looking forward to welcoming Philip to BT and helping him transition into the role from the beginning of January until my departure date on the 31st of January. Until then, my focus is firmly on driving performance and delivering on our strategic objectives. Moving to the results, highlights on slide four. We continue to have positive momentum in the second quarter, resulting in an encouraging set of numbers for the first half. This is despite intensifying competition in both the consumer and enterprise markets. Adjusted revenue was $11.6 billion, down just 1% on the first half of last year. Continued growth in consumer was offset by regulated price reductions in Openreach and trading headwinds in our enterprise businesses. Adjusted EBITDA was up 2% to $3.7 billion, driven by strong performances in consumer, business and public sector, and global services. In consumer, we're making good progress with BT Plus, and have seen positive mobile sales momentum off the back of the new range of high-end smartphones. In our enterprise businesses, we're seeing continuing declines of legacy products, but we're making solid progress in IP, mobile, and networking. Global services, in particular, has had a good half. Openreach has signed up the majority of its major and some smaller CPs to its volume-related discounts, and is seeing a good take-up of superfast products. Openreach also continues to accelerate the rollout of ultrafast networks, both FTTP and GFast. I remain pleased with the progress we are making across all areas of the business. Turning to slide five. In May, we laid out our strategy and plans for the next 3 years, focused on leadership and converged connectivity and services. I would now like to update you on how we are successfully delivering against each of these core pillars to deliver differentiated customer experiences, to invest in integrated network leadership, and to transform our operating model. Moving to slide six, our investments in customer experience continue to have a positive impact. Group Net Promoter Score is up for the ninth quarter in a row, and our right first time metric was up 2.7%. percent versus the 17-18 baseline as we improve the consistency and quality of our service. Openreach missed appointments due to Openreach faults were at an all-time low of just 1.7%, and we remain ahead of all our copper and fibre minimum service level measures. Ethernet provision also improved. Our BT and EE apps are being visited more than ever, and in October we launched an app for PlusNet customers. The volume and value of the top-ups and bill payments through the apps are up significantly year on year. For those who prefer to call, we created 1,000 new permanent jobs in our UK call centres. To improve customer satisfaction, our aim remains to answer 100% of all consumer calls in UK and Ireland call centres by the end of 2020. We now have over 3 million customers using our Call Protect product, preventing over 170 million unwarranted calls since launch. On the product side, BT Plus, our flagship convergence product, continues its positive sales momentum and now has around 500,000 subscribers a good percentage of whom are taking a mobile product. In EE, we launched our upgrade at any time plans and casting of BT Sport to TV. EE also launched its partnership with Enjoy in London, where we will deliver and set up your new smartphone at a location and time that suits you. We've introduced BT brand products across the EE store estate, and over the next 6 to 12 months, we will be expanding the current sales effort to include upgrades and service. In BT Sport, we've had another strong start to the Premier League season, with average audiences up 9% on last year. In addition, increasing numbers of customers are viewing through digital platforms and social media engagement is double last year. Yesterday, we announced a long-term extension to our content sharing deal with Sky that we announced last year. This is an important part of our super aggregator TV strategy. In enterprise, around 40% of SME broadband sales are with 4G Assure, our business broadband with next day connection and 4G backup, which is ahead of expectations, and we're seeing good sales of BTNet for larger customers. In global services, we launched a new service and network automation platform to help customers transition their networks to the latest SDN and NFV technologies. We also opened a cybersecurity operations center in India, our 15th globally, to proactively monitor and address cyber threats against our own and our customers' networks. And we were named a global leader by IDC for SDN WAN solutions. Overall, our focus is on our More for More strategy, providing customers with differentiated products, service, and reliability at good value. Moving now to our second pillar around integrated network leadership. Openreach is accelerating the deployment of FTTP and is now building at around 13,000 premises per week across the cities, BDUK, and new sites programs. We recently announced Coventry as our 11th fiber-first city, and as we press ahead with commissioning this quarter, we remain on track to double our FTTP footprint this year and reach our target of 3 million FTTP by the end of March 2021. Whilst it is early in the programme, deployment costs continue to be at the lower end of our expectations. We are engaged with both the government and Ofcom on the key enablers to ensure that we can secure a fair return on our FTTP investment, and we're making positive progress in this regard, and if successful, we are ready to expand FTTP to beyond, up to and beyond 10 million premises. While FTTP is the focus, Openreach is also expanding its ultra-fast network with GFast technology, where we have now passed more than 1.3 million premises en route to our target of 5.7 million by March 2021. Take-up of the Openreach volume-related discounts has been very good, with the majority of our major and some smaller CPs signed up. This will drive improved ARPU for Openreach, stimulate the super-fast and ultra-fast market, and increase average broadband speeds across the country. In September, we indicated our support for the government's objective to give everyone in the UK the right to a decent broadband connection by 2020. In our submission to Ofcom, we said we would be willing to be the nation's universal broadband service provider. We laid out our requirements for clarity on cost recovery, and also the importance of a technology-neutral approach that allows the use of fixed wireless solutions, enabling a rollout that would be quicker and less costly. We look forward to Ofcom's response to our submission towards the end of the year. On the mobile side, in October, we launched the UK's first live 5G trial in Canary Wharf, and we remain on track to launch 5G next year. We continue to expand our 4G geographic coverage, and EE was again named the UK's best network in RootMetrics 2018 nationwide testing. This is the fifth consecutive year that EE has won this award, confirming our UK network leadership position. Finally, on simplifying our operating model on slide 8. We're making good progress on all fronts, and at the end of the first half year, we saw a reduction of just over 2,000 roles on a gross basis as we continue to restructure the business. This is earlier than anticipated, so some of the financial benefits have flowed through earlier than expected. The role reduction was more than offset by new hires, primarily in consumer and Openreach, as we invest to improve service and drive scale FTTP deployment. Overall savings from the program are currently an annualized benefit of over $350 million with an associated cost of around $200 million. As part of other measures to simplify our business, we transferred 31,000 employees to Openreach as planned on the 1st of October, largely completing our DCR commitments to Ofcom. Openreach is now a more independent, legally separate business. At the same time, we announced the transfer of Northern Ireland networks to Openreach, meaning that we have all our fixed access businesses under the same leadership team. Prior to the 1st of October, the financial and operational KPIs of Northern Ireland networks were reported within business and public sector. As previously announced, business and public sector and wholesale and ventures have been brought together into a combined division called Enterprise to accelerate the transformation, simplify our operating model and strengthen accountabilities. Enterprise and Openreach will report on this new basis from Q3 this year. Prior to this, we will publish a pro forma reflecting these organizational changes, including 10 quarters of historical performance. And finally, in the half, we made two small disposals, our cables business in the UK and a small ICT consultancy in Germany. While neither of these sales are material, they're in line with our strategy to exit non-core businesses. Moving on now to the performance of our customer-facing units. Looking at consumer on slide 9, revenue was up 3% on last year to just under $5.3 billion, driven by greater sales and increased direct mix of our high-end smartphones. More for more pricing in broadband and mobile, growth in the SIM-only base, and improving revenues from BT Sport. This was partially offset by lower Solus voice revenues following our voluntary agreement to reduce prices. Fixed ARPU for the period was up 1%, driven by price increases and higher sports and TV revenues. And postpaid mobile ARPU was down 0.5% due to an increase in the SIM-only base. Churn remains low in the postpaid mobile base at just 1.2%, but increased in fixed broadband due to the competitive environment and the price increase during the quarter. Fixed churn is returning to more normal levels at the end of the period. Operating costs were up just 1%, driven by increased UEFA sports rights costs, offset by higher than usual supplier rebates. This good cost performance led to EBITDA of $1.22 billion, up 8% on last year. Consumer and enterprise have signed up to the volume-related discounts from Openreach. The intensity of the current retail market environment means it is too early to quantify the extent to which the discounts will flow to EBITDA. In this environment, our strategy remains to compete through product and service differentiation. As mentioned earlier, we have extended our content sharing agreements with Sky and have agreed retail distribution partnerships with John Lewis and Amazon. CapEx of $401 million was a decrease of 13% on last year as we passed the peak of the ESN deployment phase. Looking at business and public sector on slide 10. Revenue was down 4% to $2.2 billion, driven by continuing declines in traditional voice products and lower equipment sales, partly offset by continued growth in mobile volumes, IP, and networking. Lower voice product input costs, higher legacy contract costs last year, and labor cost efficiencies from our transformation program meant that operating costs were down 6% year on year. As a result, EBITDA was $708 million, up 2% on the first half of last year, although this was partly helped by the one-offs we mentioned last quarter. CapEx was down 11% on last year due to lower network and integration costs. On contract wins, we were recently awarded a five-year NHS health and social care network contract for the southeast of England, a seven-year unified communications contract with the Lothian Health Board, and a five-year wide area network services contract with the Scottish Police Authority. These add to the growing list of regional public sector contracts that we are winning. Despite this, order intake decreased 26% to $2.8 billion on a rolling 12-month basis due to the signing of a large wholesale contract in the Republic of Ireland last year. Turning now to wholesale and ventures on slide 11. Revenue was down 8% to $929 million. This was driven by lower voice usage and customers migrating to IP solutions, continuing competition in the wholesale broadband markets, and the ongoing migration of customers from partial private circuits to newer technologies. Ventures revenues grew 11% to $165 million, due mainly to growth in messaging and new external deals in our supply chain. Our Inlink footprint continues to expand, up over 100 on last quarter, with 286 units live at the end of the half year across London and 12 other cities across the UK. Operating costs were down 6%, but this was not enough to offset the revenue declines, resulting in EBITDA of $325 million, down 11%. Order intake was down 26% to $1.1 billion on a rolling 12-month basis, as last year benefited from the MVNO contract with Virgin Media. Turning to global services on slide 12. Revenues declined 7% to $2.3 billion, primarily due to the actions we are taking to move away from low-margin business. Operating costs were down 10%, reflecting lower IP exchange volumes and equipment sales, and lower labour costs as we progress the transformation of global services. In the first half, we saw a reduction of around 800 roles related to the transformation programme. EBITDA increased to $208 million as the lower revenues were more than offset by the reduction in operating costs, and we also benefited from certain one-offs. We do expect to see flatter EBITDA profile over the full year than in prior years, not least because a number of the one-off benefits reported in the second half of last year. CapEx was down 23% to $99 million, reflecting ongoing rationalisation in line with our strategy to reduce the capital employed in the business and including some deferral of spending into the second half. On a rolling 12-month basis, the order book was down 8% to $3.5 billion, continuing to reflect the shift in buyer behaviour to shorter, more flexible usage-based contracts. And as you will have seen from our business briefing in September, we have set out a clear path to transform the business by repositioning our core markets and multinational customers, building value in strategically selected areas of growth where we can add real value and differentiate on service, and lowering of costs, reducing of risk, and improving returns. We've made a good start to our move to a digital GS. Finally, to Openreach on slide 13. Revenue was down 1% on last year to $2.5 billion. Growth in FTTC and Ethernet volumes were more than offset by the decline in our physical line base, regulated price reductions on FTTC and Ethernet products of around $150 million, and around $20 million due to volume-related discounts. Excluding regulated price, Openreach revenues were up 4.4%. EBITDA of $1.2 billion was down 6% due to the revenue decline and 3% higher costs, due to pay inflation, investment in recruitment, and training of new engineers to support customer service and network deployment. This was partially offset by efficiency savings. While the Openreach volume-related discounts had a small impact in its first month, the full impact will only be felt in the second half of the year. CapEx of just over $1 billion was up 31%, driven by our network investments and higher BDUK net grant funding deferral. Our FTTC and FTTP networks are available to more than 27 million premises and have passed nearly 2 million properties with ultra-fast technology. We completed around 600,000 FTTP and FTTC broadband net connections in the first half, up 24% year-on-year. FTTC take-up currently stands at around 38% of total connections. With the majority of Openreach's major CPs having signed up to the volume-related discounts, we should expect a more predictable take-up of superfast and ultrafast broadband, a key requirement in driving acceptable returns from our investments. I will now hand you over to Simon to take you through the numbers.
Well, thank you, Gavin, and good day to everybody. Over the next few minutes, I will summarise our financial results for the first half, before concluding with our outlook for this year. As you know, we are now reporting under IFRS 15, and we're reporting half-yearly. The prior year numbers, where we give a year-on-year impact, our unaudited IFRS 15 pro forma figures. So, starting with the first half results on slide 15. Adjusted revenue was £11.6 billion, and underlying revenue, which excludes foreign exchange movements and disposals, was down 0.9%. Growth in our consumer business was more than offset by further regulatory price reductions in Openreach, primarily relating to the WLA, and declines in our enterprise units. The main contributor to the enterprise revenue decline was Global Services, where we saw a reduction in IP exchange volumes in line with our strategy to reduce low-margin business and the impact of foreign exchange. We saw continued headwinds from the declines of legacy products, but we are making solid progress in IP, mobile, and networking. Adjusted operating costs were down 3%, mainly driven by restructuring-related cost savings, partially offset by higher costs of recruiting and training new engineers to support Openreach's Fibre First programme. Adjusted EBITDA for £3.7 billion was up 2%, driven by our consumer business and efficiencies from our cost transformation programmes, offset by the enterprise revenue declines and some further investment in customer experience. Moving below EBITDA on slide 16, D&A of £1.7 billion was down 1% on last year. Our adjusted net finance expense for the half was £283 million. That's a 9% increase on last year, driven by the increase in net debt, specifically the coupon on the pension bond. The adjusted tax charge was £340 million. We expect our effective tax rate for the year to be around 20.5%. This resulted in adjusted profit after tax of £1.3 billion. Specific items after tax of £265 million were primarily a result of restructuring costs, costs relating to regulation, and a net interest charge on pensions of £69 million. Reported profit for the period after specific items was £1.05 billion. Turning to the cash flow on slide 17, and starting with adjusted EBITDA of £3.7 billion, interest, tax, working capital combined represented a cash outflow of around £1 billion. Now, the increase in working capital outlay has been driven by collection timing in the second quarter, which we do expect to normalise through the year, and, of course, the settlement of the Phones for You dispute relating to the retail trading agreement. This resulted in cash available for investment and distribution of £2.7 billion. Reported CapEx was £1.8 billion. Now, this includes a £170 million increase in the BDUK grant funding provision, which is driven by an increase in the take-up assumption from 41% to 61% following Openreach's volume-related discounts. Capacity and network investment increased to £988 million due to the BDUK assumption change, partially offset by lower mobile spend as ESN passed the peak deployment phase. The remaining CapEx components were up 1%. Cash CapEx was £1.7 billion. As a result, normalised free cash flow was £974 million in the half. That's down 22%. The net cash cost of our specific items was £277 million after specific items and a £21 million refund related to Spectrum. Reported free cash flow was an inflow of £718 million. Lastly, on the dividend, as announced at our Q2 results presentation last year, from this financial year, the interim dividend will be fixed at 30% of the prior year's full-year dividend. As a result, we're declaring an interim dividend of 4.62 pence per share, following the full-year dividend in 2017-18 of 15.4 pence per share. The board continues to expect to hold the full-year dividend unchanged at 15.4 pence per share for this financial year and next. Moving to debt and the pension on slide 18, net debt was £11.9 billion at the 30th of September, compared to £9.6 billion at the 31st of March. During the period, £2 billion of long-dated sterling bonds were issued to the BT pension scheme. In addition, in September, the group issued about £0.9 billion of 5- and 10-year euro bonds that will be used to repay term debt maturing this financial year. Other factors driving the movement in net debt include about £1 billion of dividend payments and the cash inflow from operating activities of around £800 million. The IAS 19 pension position at the end of the first half saw a reduction in the deficit to £4.5 billion net of tax, compared to £5.7 billion at the end of March, the reduction primarily being driven by the earlier mentioned bond issuance. The increase in deficit position in Q2 specifically can largely be explained by weaker equity market conditions, which led to a reduction in our asset values, and it offset the reduction seen in liabilities resulting from the higher discount rate. We announced at Q1 that we'd been alerted to an error made in the calculations of the liabilities by our independent external actuary. The pension deficit as at Q2 reflects the corrected position. In October, we appealed the judgment on the case relating to changing the indexation for Section C pensioners in the BT defined benefit scheme, and we expect a decision in the coming months. Also in October, the High Court handed down a judgment involving the Lloyds Banking Group's defined benefit pension schemes. The issues determined by the judgment, which concluded the schemes should be amended to equalise pension benefits for men and women in relation to guaranteed minimum pension benefits, arise in relation to many other defined benefit pension schemes. We are working with the trustees of our pension schemes and our actuarial and legal advisers to understand the extent to which the judgment crystallizes additional liabilities for BT's pension schemes. We estimate that this could be in the hundreds of millions of pounds, and any adjustment necessary is expected to be recognized in the second half of 2018-19. Moving to slide 19 then, on our outlook. I just wanted to start by reminding you of what we said in May. In the short term, we still expect regulation and cost inflation to offset trading and cost transformation despite the encouraging first half results. But by 2020-2021, we continue to expect this to reverse, so there is no change to the overall medium-term outlook. More specifically on page 20 for the current financial year, despite increasingly competitive markets and continued declines in legacy products, there is no change in our overall outlook for the full year. Based on current trading, we expect EBITDA to be in the upper half of our £7.3 to £7.4 billion range. And with that, let me hand you back to Gavin.
Thanks, Simon. So in summary, we've made an encouraging start to the year and continue to perform in line with expectations. We continue to deliver against our strategy, and to reiterate what Simon said, despite increasingly competitive markets and continued declines in legacy products, there is no change to our overall outlook for the full year, albeit based on current trading, we expect EBITDA to be at the upper half of the guidance range. Thank you, and we'll now open for questions.
Thank you, everyone. So, everyone, if you wish to speak, key star one on your phone. But we do have the first question coming through now from Carl Murdoch-Smith from Berenberg. Thank you, Carl. You're live in the call.
Hi, Carl.
Morning, Gavin. Two questions from me, please. First one on the recent Citizens Advice Super complaints. How do you respond to the accusations of Citizens Advice that disengaged consumers are getting a bad deal? Looking at your website, you're currently offering 33% discounts to new customers as well as Fitbits and MasterCard reward cards. The gap between front book and back book pricing appears to be wide, so it'd be interesting to just hear how you respond to those accusations, and will it change your behaviours going forward? And then secondly, I think this one's for Catherine in terms of the business connectivity market review. In the regulated statements, you mentioned that all else being equal, you'd expect to make a return of 7.4% this year in business connectivity markets, which is below your regulatory allowed WACC. As such, is it fair to expect fairly benign charge controls in Ofcom's upcoming consultation? Thank you.
Very good. Mark, would you just want to comment on the super complaint?
Yep.
Question. And then Catherine, who's joining by phone today, I'll let you pick up the business connectivity one.
Yeah, I mean, just on the complaint, if I look at the mobile market, you know, our view is that the vast majority of our customers do engage either before or at the end of their contract life cycle, and our communication, when we've looked at it, is probably the clearest and simplest across the industry. Notwithstanding that, there are still improvements that we need to make, but our customers get a minimum of 3 notifications that they're approaching the end of their contract, in many cases get a better deal at the end of it. So, you know, we'll continue to engage and work with all the relevant parties on improving communication. But, you know, we believe we're doing a lot to notify and communicate with customers, which is very important. On the new versus existing customer issue that you point to, again, existing customers, you know, can engage with us, speak to us, have personalised offers as well, which in many cases can be equivalent to or better than advertised prices for new customers as well.
Very good. Catherine, do you want to comment on the business connectivity question?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So basically, one thing just to start off with, the 7.4% that we put in the regulatory financial commentary, it's important to note that did assume that volumes and costs would be the same in 2018-19 as they were in 2017-18. And in fact, what's actually happened is that volume growth and cost efficiencies could well be expected to act against the impact of those price reductions. But putting that to one side, obviously we would expect Ofcom to take into account the level of our return on capital employed when they set price controls. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, at the start of the current charge control, you know, the current situation really does contrast with the position then, when we were earning, I think, in 2015, 2016, 23.8%. So I would expect that would factor into to the Ofcom charge control.
Very good.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And the next question from Akhil Dattani from JP Morgan. Thank you, Akhil. You're live in the call.
Hi, Akhil.
Hi, morning. So 2 questions, please, if I can. First, just on your EBITDA guidance, you've tweaked up the messaging to the upper half of the range, but I guess a natural question is just how we think about phasing from here. As you've gone through the numbers, kind of very decent start to the year, 1% growth in Q1, 3% Q2. The implied performance for H2 is obviously much weaker than that at -3-ish. -6-ish. Can you just walk us through, you know, what are the moving parts? What are the main deltas? You know, should we think about this as prudent, or are there specific items you want to call out? So that's the first question. And then I guess the second is on KPI trends. I guess the one slight niggle on the numbers has been that your fixed churn in consumer has stepped up to 1.6%, and you don't disclose net adds, but the implied losses in the quarter do seem to have stepped up quite a bit. Again, any sort of color around dynamics, drivers, outlook would be really useful. Thanks.
Simon, do you want to just answer the question on guidance?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think as I said in my remarks, nothing fundamental has changed since the guidance and medium-term outlook that we provided in May. We've not changed our overall outlook for the full year, although, as you say, based on current trading, we do expect the EBITDA to be in the upper half of the $7.3 to $7.4 billion range, pound range that we provided. We have seen a different seasonal phasing in 2018-19 than in prior years. And that's resulted in relatively earlier recognition of profit in H1 this year, and has contributed to the stronger sort of year-on-year movement. Now, effectively, about half of that, and I think probably half of the beat to consensus, is due to this sort of seasonal phasing. And there are two particular areas where this is most pronounced. Openreach benefited from a later take-up of the fibre volume deals than was originally anticipated, and we're going to see the full impact of that in H2. And so the market is expecting higher profits in H2 than H1, and that, I think, didn't properly factor in the second half weighting of the price discounts on the volume deals. And the second key area has been global services. And I think Gavin mentioned this in his remarks. It's had a GS has had a more even phasing of quarterly trading this year than we've seen in the past. And in addition to that, it did benefit from a number of one-offs in the second half last year, whereas we've had a number of those one-offs in the first half of this year. So those are the two primary impacts that that I call out. But again, nothing fundamental has changed since May. Our overall outlook is unchanged. As I said, we just expect to see the EBITDA probably in the upper half of our range.
Brilliant. Do you want to comment on the spike in fixed broadband churn?
Yeah, so you pointed to the KPI on fixed churn up at 1.6%. First thing to say is, I suppose, it's not unusual during a price rise to see a spike in churn. And if you look at the historical KPIs, we've been at 1.5% for three quarters in 2016-17, for example. Notwithstanding that, the level is a bit higher than I'd like. However, it is returning to more consistent levels that we've seen, which is encouraging. It is a competitive market, and our price rise did coincide with the Openreach offer flowing through to ourselves and others, which has driven some price pressure. But notwithstanding that, as I say, our churn is returning to more normal levels.
Very good. Next question.
Thank you. This is from Dhananjay Merchandani from Bernstein. Thank you. You're live in the call.
Hi, Dhananjay.
Yes. Hi, good morning, Gavin. Thank you very much. My question is related to your fibre to the premise build and commercialization progress. And there are two parts to it. Firstly, I mean, you reported 680,000 FTTP premises at the end of the last quarter. And you said in your remarks that you're running at a rate of 13,000 net new premises per week. But if I look at your sequential progression, the footprint growth has oddly slowed from 74,000 in Q4 of 17-18 to 51,000 in the previous quarter. What am I missing here, and how confident are you that you're going to be able to ramp up to the 200,000 odd premises that you need to add on a quarterly basis to get to your 3 million target? So that's the first half of the question. The second half, I mean, your end-of-period adoption of fibre to the premise is about 33%, which is probably a meaningless number. I mean, what sort of adoption rates are you seeing on a cohort basis, and how consistent are these against your business case assumptions? Thank you.
In a word, head ends, but I'll let Clive explain it to you.
Yeah, hi there. Look, it's very simple. What we have accelerated tremendously in H1 is the deployment of the access network. This is the hard bit, the deploying of the cables, the splitters, the aggregation nodes, the network that is delivered in the streets of the cities in which we are building. What we will do in Q3 is undertake the commissioning work on that already built network, which involves light testing through the access network and into head ends, which we have very recently installed at the relevant exchanges. So there's a lot of build that's been completed across H1, but particularly in the second quarter as we've accelerated. That is yet to be commissioned. Most of that commissioning will be complete during Q3. So my expectation is that that will be available for sale in Q4 of this year. And let me assure you that the build rate is commensurate with our previous remarks, which was that this year we will double our FTTP footprint in the UK across three programs, new sites, Speedy UK, but very significantly the build in the cities.
And just to comment on take-up, your volume-related discount offer, Clive, includes both superfast and ultrafast, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. And I think the question was very specifically about FTTP. And, you know, year on year, if I compare what we did in Q2 in terms of take-up on FTTP, the run rate's roughly double what it was in that same period a year prior.
But I think the incentives are now in place to drive take-up as you build coverage. So
correct.
You know, it's too early to draw any firm conclusions, but we're confident that we can deliver against the business case for the 30 million.
That's correct.
Well, thank you very much.
Next question, please.
Certainly, thank you. This is from Polo Tang from UBS. Thank you. You're live in the call.
Hi. I've just got two questions. The first one's on BT Sports, because you mentioned a long-term extension of your content supply agreement with Sky. So can you elaborate what's changed versus your prior agreement, and does this mean that you'll be reducing the amount of investment in BT Sports going forward? The second question is really just about consumer mobile. Can you maybe talk about what you're seeing in terms of competitive dynamics there? Specifically, we had strong numbers from O2 yesterday, so is the whole market doing well, or is it a case of O2 and EE taking notable share? Thanks.
Mark?
Yeah, just on the Sky agreement, I mean, the key thing that's changed is the length of the agreement. It was a relatively standard agreement before, and we've extended that, so it's longer for both sides. That's more strategic, gives us more time to plan together, and you know, I think it's positive that that's a long-term agreement, and you know, this is not just just about reselling Sky's products. This is a deep integration into our set-top box that will allow you know, product benefits for customers and more choice and a much better TV experience. And that's an vindication of our super aggregator strategy and the partnership approach we have with Sky on the content side. So we're pleased about that. On mobile, it's hard to, we've seen O2's results, obviously. We've seen ours. We haven't seen everyone else's, so it's hard to comment on the overall market. It is still very early days on the new iPhone launches, and what we've got there is a reverse of what we saw last year, where the premium device was launched second. This year, the premium device was launched first, and the second device, the XR, was only launched last Friday. So it's still quite early for us to call what that means in terms of the quarter that we're now in. Notwithstanding that, you know, we're still seeing growth in SIM only. We continue to see a very competitive environment in terms of prices, both from retail MNOs and wholesale MVNOs. But you know, with all of that activity going on, we're still you know, relatively pleased with our performance in that very competitive market.
And circling back to BT Sports, can you maybe just comment about your thoughts about the quantum of programming spend in BT Sport going forward? Thanks.
Well, look, we will continue to, you know, the BT Sport product offering needs to be compelling for our viewers and customers, and our strategy is to get BT Sport viewed and watched by more customers on more platforms. So, you know, we're pleased with the agreement with Sky. You know, we are also exploring expanding BT Sport as a product onto other platforms as well. The viewing's up, the revenues are up on BT Sports, and quality programming with a disciplined approach to you know, what we spend in auctions is the ingredients that will drive that.
Very good. Right. Next question.
Thank you. From Nick Delfus from Redburn. Thank you, Nick. You're live.
Hi, Nick.
Yeah, hi there. Thanks very much. So on Now TV and the new product, could you just remind us when it's going to launch? On consumer, could you explain a little bit more the supplier rebates and where those are coming from? And then finally, just on Openreach, really a question for Gavin. What's the main benefit of keeping Openreach within the group in your view, as opposed to, you know, the negative arguments about the cost to separate? Thanks very much.
Very good. Mark, do you want to give a quick answer to the first two?
Well, it'd be in time for the next season, which will be the key, next football season, which will be the key. That we haven't given a specific date, but in time for that next season.
Sorry, could I just, is that a delay? I thought it was supposed to be early 2019 before.
Well, we did say early. It's probably moved a few weeks, but that's as a result of this much deeper product integration on both sides. And that's a lot of work on both sides.
Supplier
rebates. I mean, this is a pretty normal way in which various handset manufacturers work with us to drive sales of high-end smartphones. And in the quarter, we saw an elevated level due to the increased competition in the market, and we use those to maintain a competitive position in the market, which has flowed through to the revenues on that side.
Then on Openreach, periodically we look at this to make sure that it's the right decision, but ultimately the board believes Openreach is better as part of the BT group overall, and I think you can see the results in the first half of the year that demonstrate it's performing extremely well. Not only is it delivered against its DCR obligations, it's at the service standards and service levels are at record high, and the investment levels are at record high as well. So, it's just performing well. The strategic argument is very simple. It means that as part of the same group, Openreach has an anchor tenant with which it can plan, and the major, the significant investments, which run at double-digit years in terms of payback, and that is, that's good for BT shareholders, but it's also good for the country as a whole because it gives a degree of certainty how we move to each of these next generation of technologies, and we can do that, I think, in a way that ensures that it's Openreach continues to be able to serve everybody on an equivalent basis, but also gives some certainty to the market going forward. And that remains, the core strategic argument, the anchor tenant argument, as we call it, of why we believe that, from a strategic perspective, Openreach is better as part of the group. There's a raft of financial challenges, if we ever wanted to separate it, of course, which have been well rehearsed. But from a strategic perspective, the anchor tenant argument is the most important one.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. So the next one now is Maurice Patrick from Barclays. Thank you, Maurice. You're live in the call.
Oh, thanks, guys. Morning, guys. Question on BT Plus. So you've highlighted strong additions to the Plus product, and you did mention a number of people taking mobile as well. Do you see a strong customer pull for converged products? There remains a debate around the customers really wanted. Is it pushed upon them? Is it about price? So just the extent of which customers want to take mobile as part of the product, and is it a question of you pushing it on them, and are you discounting to get there? Thank you.
Well, I'll ask Mark to comment in a second on this, but the trends and the evidence from the rest of Europe is really, really clear on it. There is a market, and there is a customer demand for converged products, and we're beginning to see that come through in the UK, which is absolutely consistent with it. And these are not discounted products, by the way. They are products that bring the best of fixed and best of mobile together. But Mark, do you want to talk about the success of BT Plus?
Yeah, I mean, this is its first full quarter, and we are pleased. And we always said that BT Plus would be a series of chapters, and we've launched what we call Chapter 1 in May. And there are two key benefits of convergence here. The first that customers are really valuing is our keep connected promise. So this is, in the very unlikely eventuality that the broadband network is not performing as they would like, we will send that customer a 4G mobile Wi-Fi device next day. And if they have mobile with us, put some extra data on their mobile device so they can use that as a hotspot. And that's giving real reassurance and value to the proposition there. For customers that do take mobile, they do get increased levels of data and benefits as a result of that. And we're seeing encouraging numbers of customers taking both mobile and broadband together. Plus is our highest ARPU product. It's very much positioned as a premium, the very best of fixed and mobile together. and we're very excited about the next couple of chapters, which we'll be announcing over the coming weeks and months in terms of how that proposition evolves and delivers more value for customers.
Very good. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. And the next one from David Wright, Bank of America. Thank you, David.
Hi, David.
Good morning, and thanks for taking questions. I've one just on the commentary you gave, Simon, both on the call and is in the release on the Lloyds pension decision precedent, I guess we could call it. I'm just trying to understand, I mean, I guess my first question might be a little more difficult to answer, which is just when you say hundreds of millions, you know, that could be 200, could be 900, but it obviously makes a big difference. Could we get any more granularity? But my second question is how we could potentially see that managed. Is it something that could just accrue into the deficit and to be dealt with sort of over time, or is it something that might need more immediate funding, possibly even debt issuance? How should we think about that if there is any more information you can give us right now? Thank you.
Simon.
Yes. Okay, so the first part of your question, we're not able at this stage to give you any further information beyond the estimate provided in our release this morning that the impact could be in the hundreds of millions of pounds. But I think we also made clear that if any adjustment that is necessary, we'll be making in the second half. In terms of how's it managed, I mean, we're days into this, but we will be working and are working with the trustees and our various advisors to understand the extent to which this judgment crystallises additional liabilities for the scheme. If it does crystallise additional liabilities, then that gets built into the valuation of the liabilities and therefore into the deficit and is then factored into future triennial valuations and funding plans, but not immediate impacts in terms of contributions.
Okay, and if I may just follow up, could the significance of this precedent mean that there could be a kind of accelerated sort of triennial review? Could that be just brought forward to have to deal with this here and now? And then could you just maybe just give us a little granularity on how many women you have in the pension scheme, if that's possible? Thank you.
The answer to your second question, no, I'm not going to provide that statistic, and it really depends. The ratio is not very meaningful because it depends on who was in particular part of the scheme. So that's the first, your second question to your first. The reason why pension schemes have triennial valuations, i.e. every 3 years, is to pick up issues and events that can impact assets and liabilities in that time window, bring them together and review them as part of triennial valuation process, and we'd expect that rhythm to proceed into the future.
Very good. Next question, please.
Certainly. This is Michael Bishop from Goldman Sachs. Thank you, Michael. You're live.
Morning, Michael.
Yes, thanks. Good morning. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, you highlighted quicker delivery on the transformation plan and appreciate it's only two quarters in, but could you talk about which areas you are ahead and essentially whether that is sustainable and we should extrapolate and pull forward some of the overall three-year targets despite no change in the midterm guidance? And then secondly, just picking up on the volume discount impact in the second half, from an Openreach perspective, I think you mentioned 30 million impact for 1 month in the press release. So should we just extrapolate that into the second half, or is there any other factors that might make that 30 million not representative? And then secondly, on your guidance overall, are you essentially assuming some price reaction from competitors factored into your guidance, and have you actually seen that yet? So if you don't see that, is that upside to guidance? Thanks very much.
Okay. Very good. You sound as though you need a new telephone provider there, Michael. We can talk about that later. Simon.
Okay. The IP phones.
I think technically that was three questions with two parts in one of them, but nevertheless we will address all three. So firstly, on the cost transformation plan, I think we're making good progress and are firmly on track with the delivery of our multiple components of the transformation program across the business. Yes, we've seen a little bit earlier delivery, but as you yourself said, we're 2 months in. We're not at this stage changing our views about the program or the timing of the benefits overall. In terms of the bit more color on that, as we said, the transformation plan has got improvement programs in each and every part of our business. There are also some cross-BT programs, particularly where we're looking at the efficiency of our organizational structures. And we're also, as you know, looking at creating a more consolidated and, we think, better workplaces for all of our employees. And those programs are all progressing. I think we've seen some particular areas of progress in GS, who've made a great start in their program and have contributed strongly in the first part of the year. Also in the corporate units, we've progressed pretty quickly on a number of our sort of organizational restructuring. We've also seen in Openreach the fault reduction program continue, and that delivers very important benefits for us in terms of the resilience of the copper network and delivers savings over time. And then in technology, where we are facing continued energy demand growth, we've been addressing that through our adiabatic cooling investment program, which is driving reductions in energy consumption. So those are some of the examples of areas that are delivering on the cost transformation program. So key message, firmly on track. Yes, we've seen a bit of early delivery, but in terms of overall quantum and timing, we're absolutely where we expected to be. In terms of the Openreach question, to piece this together, we did indeed say that there was overall 30 million in our press release of sort of non-directly price regulated impact. In fact, in Gavin's speech, he called out only 20 of that was directly related to the volume deals. And so that's 20 million on the first sort of month and a bit of the deal. And yes, you can think about that in terms of price impacts extrapolating through the remainder of this year. Although there will be some volume mitigation against that. So that's the dynamic in Openreach. And then I think finally, you asked about the price impacts of that. And I think your question was at the retail price level. And as we said, when we announced the WLA and indeed in February and then subsequently, I think it was in July, on the commercial deal, we do anticipate some net impact to the group due to retail pricing dynamic. We've seen some immediate response to this deal in retail prices in the broadband market, and it's much too early to tell how that will play out over time, but we built and have built a range of outcomes into our both guidance for this year and indeed our medium-term outlook.
Just to correct one thing in the transcript, 2 quarters in, not 2 months. Sorry. So I just wanted to make sure that was correct.
Yeah, thank
Very
you.
Very good. Next question.
Thank you. From Nick Lyle, SocGen. Thank you, Nick. You're live.
Morning, Gavin. Just a couple on business, please, if that's okay. On the public sector and major business revenues, still no sign of improvement yet. Do you expect that to start to improve a little into the second half, given the 6 contracts are more or less out now, and it sounds like you've made some more signings? And then second, on corporate, minus 13 seemed a pretty disappointing number. At what point does that become an issue on the corporate side? And is that very thin margin business, so it doesn't really worry you in terms of stabilising EBITDA by year end? Thanks.
Very good. Jerry.
Yeah, let me say those two. On public sector, yeah, I think that we definitely see that the large contracts that we've talked about for some time are definitely stabilising, although there are still some, you know, wind-offs there. What I said last time, there will be no surprises on there, and the headwinds are definitely decreased significantly. We're definitely reinforcing our position within public sector, and we are winning, but I wouldn't want to overstate the position there, because there are continuing positions around some of the large contracts that we do hold, that with the government doing a more regional decentralised model, that they've been split up and re-tendered. So, I mean, I think it's a pretty steady position we've got there, and that's what we're looking to progress going forward. I don't think there's going to be some sudden change, positive or negative. I think that's it's a pretty tough market, but actually we are holding our own there. On corporate, I would say that in the corporate numbers, there is quite a lot of movement of accounts in there, which is on the year-on-year. So you do see a position that is significantly impacted. That actually that market is actually holding its own for us. I think it's we're pretty competitive. You do see there are some offsets, which we haven't announced separately, because in truth, when we looked at them, they were relatively small in the scale of corporate and scale of the overall, but significant in the corporate numbers. They're also within there. That's probably where we did the most equipment, and therefore, again, as we've walked away from that revenue, that has also impacted the corporate numbers. But in trading, actually, that's performing reasonably well.
Very good. Thanks, Nick.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And from Robert Grindle, Deutsche Bank. Thank you, Robert. You're live.
Hi, Robert.
Hi there. Good morning. Good going this morning. My question is on universal service. Gavin, you mentioned that just made a new submission to Ofcom. So maybe you could say a few more words about that. Is it sort of, to the most part, in line with what you've previously proposed and that was rejected? Clearly no one else is stepping up to the plate. If it's different, how is it different? And just to clarify, is a USO project in the medium-term guidance? Many thanks.
Very good. It is a new proposal. It has a much more significant fixed mobile access component of it, which means we'll be able to roll it out. It's going to allow us to roll out faster, at greater pace, and in a more cost-effective way. And in terms of guidance, Simon, do you want to just reference on guidance?
Yeah, I mean, I think the current thinking on the ESO wouldn't have a material impact on the, obviously not on this year, but actually in our medium-term outlook, it wouldn't have a meaningful impact on that time period to 2021. The issue then will be the extent of capital, and that's something that we'll be working through as we develop the proposition. And we would look in the next 2 years for which we've provided CapEx guidance. I wouldn't expect it to make an impact on that. Obviously, beyond that, we'll need to consider.
Very good. Next question.
Thank you. John Carradice from Numis. Thank you, John. You're live.
Hi, John.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning. Good morning. Just a couple of questions, please. Maybe one for Jerry and one for Simon, please. Jerry, is it possible, following on from Nick's question, just to talk about the sort of moving parts over the next 2 or 3 years? I know BT doesn't give guidance at the line of business level, but I just want to understand what the future holds, really, for this division. Maybe talk about, for example, any sort of market share aspirations you have, because certainly relative to other incumbents in Europe, your market share is pretty low. And then secondly, for Simon, please, so you've had a pretty significant working capital outflow pretty much consistently for the last few years. Partly, occasionally, that's because other CPs use you as a bank, but also to do with global services. Given that what you're trying to do at global services, what are the prospects for that line in the cash flow to become a positive in the next few years? Again, I'm not asking for a forecast, but just to understand the sort of moving parts there, please.
But Jerry, do you want to give a sort of broad brush commentary on how you see the future of? I think what you're looking for is the business and public sector
part
yes.
to your new enterprise division.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things here. One thing I'd say is, you know, we're 5 months into putting the business together. We're quite far on in developing the strategy. We'll do a specific business briefing for you early next year is the plan. So, and we'll talk through that in much more detail then. In terms of the BPS part of that today, I mean, the dynamics are, there's a few dynamics I'd call out. One is, and it's not specific to business and public sector, is the legacy decline that we've got. So you see the voice decline, you see the copper decline, and those two dynamics are, in terms of product set, the biggest decline for us. And what we need to do, and we spoke about this last time, is to increase what we do in terms of voice over IP, mobile and networking. Those are the fundamental short-term drivers that we need to get, you know, accelerated. You could have seen, you've seen in the quarter that we've started to focus more on the voice over IP. We've had a good quarter there. We've stepped up the numbers. We need to continue to do that. In terms of market share, I think we are now the biggest acquirer on VoIP seats in the market. But we need to do a lot more on that. It's you know some of the numbers from other CPs. But I think we do need to further accelerate that. We'll be bringing further products in to do it. The offer from OpenReach gives us an opportunity to start to look at the copper base. We need to do that. Once we've got that, I think we have what we need to actually start to, you know, consolidate the position in terms of market share. I think the market share that we have is reasonable. When you look at the numbers here, they don't include the GS element of the UK. So in terms of BT, I think we have a, you know, it's a bigger market share than just looking at business and public sector. In terms of, you know, the dynamics there, I think actually we're well placed. I think the brand is very strong. The consideration to the BT brand is much higher than I expected. We're certainly seeing first purchase consideration in the 40% across almost all of business sizes. So I think if we can get the sales position right with the right products, I'm really comfortable that actually we can start to make a dent in the performance of the business. Public sector is a challenge. You are definitely seeing a drive to SMEs, and we need to fight against that. And that's one of the headwinds which I think, you know, is harder for us to fight against, but it's one that actually we're doing reasonably well. We are doing more of a regional focus in the sales team in that area to try and make sure that I actually build the right relationships to compete there. I think I'll stop there, actually, but I think that covers most of the key dynamics, but we will go into a much deeper overview, as I say, early next year.
Okay. And on working capital, you're right to call out that we have had some, what I describe as sort of one-off impacts to our working capital over the last 12 to 24 months associated with Italy. We mentioned in this quarter the Phones for You settlement that we've reached. So those are ones that I think we don't build into our forward-looking view. And for this business, one would expect to run with a broadly balanced working capital position. There will clearly be some volatility from one quarter to another due to the specific timing of payments or, for example, movements in IFRS 15 have some more volatility in working capital. Overall, we should be running this business with a broadly balanced position. Clearly, you know, as you grow sales, you accumulate and you get an outflow. When you are in a period of decline, it drops back. And ditto, if we're ramping up CapEx, you know, that will have a positive movement on working capital. So, you know, those are the two drivers to watch, pace on revenue, growth in CapEx, but overall we would expect to run with a balanced position.
Very good.
Thank you.
Question.
Thank you. From Paul Sidney, Credit Suisse. Thank you, Paul. You're live.
Morning, Paul.
Good morning, Gavin. Good morning, everyone. I just had a couple of questions, please. So firstly, just to follow up on BT Sport, it'd be great to get your comments on how important Champions League is to you now, or is to BT Sport, now you've signed the wholesale deal with Sky, and in particular, how you see the balance between paying £400 million per year for the exclusive content and against having the midweek content, which is obviously very important for pubs and clubs. And then just secondly, on Openreach and the FTTP plan, you mentioned in your commentary that the intention is to expand up to 10 million and then beyond. I've never seen that beyond wording before. Am I reading too much into that, or has something changed in terms of the viability of building FTTP beyond the 10 million? Or is the cost coming down faster than you expected? It'd be just great to hear Clive's comments on that. Thank you.
Very good. On sports, the Champions League is going really well for us.
Yep.
Audience up 50%.
Yep.
Just starting a new contract.
That's right. And I think it all comes back to super aggregator is our approach, which is our philosophy is to give customers the maximum amount of choice on our platform, which is why we've signed Sky, why we've signed Netflix, why we've recently signed Amazon, and that's all about providing choice. And you know, we've wholesaled, for example, to Virgin for some time, and that's been an important part of getting revenues against the cost of BT Sport. Advertising provides another element of income for us. Pubs and clubs also does, notwithstanding the impact it has on brand and customer acquisition and retention. So having our own rights, we believe, is still an important part of our portfolio. But as you've seen in some recent much lower profile auctions, we are being very disciplined with regards to our approach and won't pay any more than what we believe the rights are worth to us.
Very good. To 10 million and beyond, Clive, if you want to comment on that.
Okay. Look, we're going to take this in stages. We have a huge ambition for this year alone, which is to build as much this year as we built in the sum of the last 8 years. So my ambition short term is to demonstrate that we can indeed build 600,000 footprint in 1 year, build it, commission it, and deliver a build cost point which meets our business case need, and build it to a quality that means that when we then sell it and provision on it, we give a great customer experience to our CP customers. So that's the first objective. I am confident if we can do that, we are good for the 3 million by the end of 2021. And over the following 2 years, we'll be proving that we can step up the volumes yet again. But in those 2 years, I also need to prove that we can sell it at price points that also meet the business case need, because our investment in FTTP will be to the ambition that we stated, which is 10 million by the mid-2020s. But we will do this very rationally. We're doing it to make a business, to make money, to meet a business case. So we're going to continuously test our performance against build cost as we raise throughput. And it's very important to prove that we don't lose any control of the build cost point as throughput expands. And then we have to prove that we can sell it and that we can provision it at the business case cost, and that there is a sufficient appetite from the CPs for this premium platform for their end customers. So that's how I think about it. Very ambitious, would love to do 10, would love to go beyond 10, but we'll do that if there's a business to do it, if there's a business case to do it.
So, I mean, let me clarify it. You shouldn't read too much into it. It was a statement that said, look, if the business case is working as we get towards 10, of course we'll look to go further, but we're not changing our position at this point, and don't overinterpret it.
That's very clear. Thank you very much.
Next question.
Thanks, Bertie. Thank you. This is from Wilson Fry, Royal Bank of Canada. Thank you, Wilson.
Yes, good morning. Mark said on the call earlier that the jump in fixed line churn to 1.6% was a spike related to price rises. Obviously, when I look at your price rises, when you look at your prices on your website, if you're charging £30 per month for low-speed fibre, that goes up to £45 at the end of the contract. By contrast, Vodafone's down at £21 a month and is taking share. So I'm just wondering, that looks more like an ongoing issue. Can you give us some comment around that? And what sort of level do you think you'd let churn get to before you take remedial action? Second question, could you just clarify the impact of volume-related discounts for the second half? I know you gave an answer to that. I just want to clarify that. Is that two quarters at 30 a quarter or two at 20? Thank you.
Very good. I'll ask Simon to comment on the 20 million in a second, but what's happening on churn? And
what's your view we had the price rise as well as the coinciding element of the new deal kicking in for us and other CPs. So that has created a very competitive environment, and you pick one of a number of players that are doing some relatively aggressive pricing activity at the moment. Having said that, I think there are two or three things you should think about. First is, as I said before, our churn is returning to more normal levels. 1.6% is higher than I would like. We've seen levels of 1.5 before for a few quarters, but I would like the churn lower than that, and we are trending towards much lower levels and much more normal levels over the last few weeks, which is an encouraging sign. The other important part of our strategy is differentiation through convergence, and it's really important for us not to be in a like-for-like battle for customers, and using our mobile network, using convergence, using BT Plus on BT, using Data Boost on EE, and using PlusNet where relevant to compete against different brands using different strategies. But for the premium brands, BT and EE, it's all about convergence and differentiation, and not just a fixed like-for-like battle, but one for convergence. And the early signs on how Plus is going is encouraging.
Very good. Simon, do you want to pick up the second question on impact of volume discounts?
Yes, the volume discounts. So my comments related specifically to Openreach revenue and EBITDA. And what we said is that we've seen in the first half a 20 million impact on Openreach revenue associated with the volume deals. You'll recall that we announced these deals at the end of July as they ramped up. So the 20 million is about a month's impact, essentially. So we've obviously got 6 months left of the year, and that therefore gives you the basis for thinking through what the price impact would be. Now, of course, as the CPs engage in the deal, they are driving volume in order to secure those discounts, and so there will be some volume mitigation to that, obviously, during the year. And I would also point you back to what we said in July when we announced these deals, which is that the impact of the new pricing structure is likely to have an adverse impact in the order of high tens of millions of pounds in Openreach for this financial year. So hopefully that gives you the what you need in terms of the guidance on the volume discounts.
Thanks, Holton. Next question.
Thank you. This is Jerry Dennis from Jefferies. Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah. Good morning. Hi. I've got two questions, please. First one is on business and public sector. I think there is still some residual public sector work that BT is still handling, which has yet to be sort of handed over, related to some of the lost contracts. So I wondered what the sort of quantum of profit associated with that stuff is, and at what point during the year you'd expect that to migrate across, please. And then on the consumer side, sorry to labour the point, but it is quite important. I mean, this quarter, the retail broadband competitors are armed with Openreach fibre discounts for a full three-month period. And obviously that does incentivise them to push the higher speed products that they may not have focused on in the past. Mark mentioned that fixed churn is trending back to more normal levels in the quarter, which seems really an excellent performance given the tougher competitive environment. So I sort of wondered what the sort of secret sauce in all this is. Exactly what is it that is enabling you to trade better this quarter despite the more sort of competitive environment that surrounds you? Thank you.
Gary, do you want to comment on public sector contracts and the prospects going forward? And then Mark, quick comment on your secret sauce.
Yeah, on the public sector contracts, there is definitely still some unwind goes on, and it's a slow position. But in a number of those contracts, they're large customers, and there's more than one conversation going on. So I wouldn't look at it in terms of, you know, when does the revenue stop coming. It's a much more complicated picture than that.
Very good, Mark.
Well, I think when we do price rises, I think the last time we did one was around 9 months ago. There is a reasonably significant operational impact. And you see that in the churn. You can feel that in the call centres as well, because we're dealing with much heightened levels of customer activity. Those that are wanting to negotiate better deals or potentially want to leave, which is why we do see that spike. Now, net at the end of that period, we do come out in a better place financially, but the operational impact is pretty significant in the quarter, and it does last for the quarter. So getting back to a more stable operation in the call centres is an important part of that. Customers adjusting their behaviour, packages, to the new pricing is also a part of that. And the most important thing I believe we need to do going forward, which is the journey we've started, is to differentiate through convergence and not be in a like-for-like battle for customers with the same product at a lower price. I don't believe that's what our strategy should be, nor is it what it is. It's about differentiation through convergence. We've got the UK's biggest and best mobile network. We're bringing those benefits together with our broadband product in Plus, giving customers already mobile benefits of our Keep Connected promise on 4G if the broadband performance isn't there, giving them better data on their mobile device if they take the two products together. And that's just the start. That's our first chapter. There's a number of other chapters to go on Plus. So that's how we're thinking about differentiating, which is getting us back to more normalised levels of churn and hopefully gives us a more competitive position as we look for some new customers as well. But the priority is very much on reducing churn and looking after our existing customers first.
Thank you.
Very good. Right, we're into the final straight now.
Thank you. This is James Ratzer from New Street Research. Thank you, James.
Hi, James.
Hi, yes, good morning, everyone. Thank you. Two questions, please, both on FTTH again, I'm afraid. So just a bit of understanding where the timeline is now on your discussions with Ofcom and government. And we had Ofcom and government both put out documents really quite supportive around your build in July, but I suppose we haven't really heard much since then. So just be good to get an understanding of what discussions are going on between you and Ofcom and the government. When do you think you might be in a position to be able to make firmer commitments actually around that 10 million target and what the economics of it would be? And the second question, one for Mark, please, and hopefully not too awkward with Clive sitting in the room as well, but now that you are independent from Openreach, we hear quite a bit about unbundlers building out in the UK, overbuilders. Are there situations over the next year or two where if you're starting to lose retail share to these overbuilders, you would actually consider buying wholesale off the overbuilders directly rather than actually through Openreach? Thank you.
Okay, Catherine, do you want to just comment on the discussions we're having with Ofcom and government around the enablers and Fairbet?
Yeah, absolutely. So, as you said, in July, Ofcom put out a document that was broadly supportive of creating a more attractive climate for investment in full fibre. We very much welcomed that. And it was very clear to everybody, I think even at that point, that there would have to be some further discussions on the detail. Those discussions are ongoing. I think it's fair to say they're going well. There are some particularly key issues where we are expecting more from Ofcom in the next few months. One of those, as Gavin said, is around Fair Bet. I think they are willing to say a little more about Fair Bet and what Fair Bet means, and I think we're in a good dialogue with them, especially as we think about ourselves as BT Group, as parents, Openreach, about what that means in practice. So hoping to get more on that, perhaps even before Christmas. And then obviously the other issue that is particularly important for us in the context of support for FTTH is the question of what happens to the costs that exist in the existing copper network. And again, good discussions with Ofcom on that. Again, we're hoping to see a little more from Ofcom in the next few months on how that might work in practice. And then, of course, in parallel with all of that, the work continues with government on the overall sort of barrier busting designed to bring costs down overall. So I think it's a positive story on that, and there should be more that we can point to from Ofcom in the next few months.
Very good.
So, Catherine, can I ask a follow-up, please? I mean, I think in July, Ofcom had hinted they would be happy with a situation where wholesale prices in the UK on a blended basis would broadly be inflationary. I mean, would you say that is still the current position that you're finding in discussions with them?
Yeah, I mean, Ofcom are very clear that they don't want to see significant increases in price of the existing copper products. I can understand why that is. I think the key question for us is across the balance of measures from Ofcom. So, you know, firstly the question about copper cost recovery, but also the question about the extent of regulation and what they do on Fair Bet. So I think it's really important to look at this in terms of the package as a whole. And as I say, I think we're expecting more really in the next few months.
Very good. And Mark, do you want to talk about where you buy your access from?
Well, I mean, at the moment, Openreach is the only provider, and Clive's talked to the numbers and the scale of ramp up, providing a network on that scale that's meaningful. You know, we've seen, I think, like other CPs, you know, improve levels of service and quality in terms of how we partner to deliver that network for customers. So it's not really a question or a challenge we've had to deal with, because the only provider at scale is Openreach at the moment.
And they're delivering very well. I'll save Clive's brushes.
Great. So just to confirm on that, you don't see any situation, let's say, in the next 2 years as a time frame where you would buy from any supplier other than Openreach?
Not on current information, no.
Great. Thank you.
Very clear.
Thank you.
Next question.
This is Stephen Howard, HSBC. Thank you, Stephen.
Hi, Stephen.
Oh, hi there, Kevin. Sorry, I've got some interference on my headset. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Good. So this is a kind of follow-on question from the last one, really, and might be best directed towards Catherine. I mean, the specific statement in the FTIR, which I think was being alluded to, was the government saying that we would expect to see incremental revenue from the delivery of more valuable services. And I suppose my concern is that there could be a lot of well-meaning intention, but that it kind of gets lost amidst all the individual reviews that are being conducted. So, you know, you've got the BCMR, you've now got this Ofcom looking into the area of the CMA super complaint and so on. So I'm just looking for any comfort that we can get that the thinking here is sufficiently joined up, or, you know, how can we comfort ourselves against the risk that in the, you know, with the officials dealing with the individual reviews, that you may wind up with outcomes that in aggregate just, you know, don't help make the case for build. Thanks.
Catherine, do you want to just comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, it is a really, really good question, Stephen, and I can see why you're asking it. There is an awful lot going on in this space. I mean, the thing I think gives us cause for real optimism is actually the FTIR from government, because, you know, the clarity of the vision that was set out in the FTIR in terms of what the government wants to see particularly in terms of investment in fibre, but also actually investment in 5G as well. I think what we're seeing is we're seeing that clarity of vision flowing right the way through everything the government says, and then also everything that Ofcom says. So I think, you know, the reason I'm feeling quite optimistic on it is that we now have that North Star from government in terms of its strategic vision. And every time, certainly every time I have a conversation with Ofcom, you know, it tracks back exactly to that vision and what we're all trying to achieve. So you're right, there's an awful lot going on, and we really shouldn't be complacent, and it is a responsibility that I think we all have to make sure that the thing adds up, hopefully to more than some of the parts, and certainly not to less than some of the parts. But I think that North Star in terms of the vision in FTIR is really helpful.
I mean, has Ofcom actually, in any of their conversations with you, cited that statement in the FTIR?
Oh,
is
yeah.
That clear there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the conversations that we have with Ofcom are about how their work is giving effect to the vision that was set out in the FTIR to its extent, and I think they are completely aware of that in everything that they're doing. Now, of course, you know, as you said yourself, there's an awful lot of detail to work through, and there is the potential for some parts of one review to cut against other parts of another review, and we have to make sure that that doesn't happen. But I think the strategic intent is really clear.
Very good. Last couple of questions.
Certainly. We have Guy Peddy from Macquarie. Thank you, Guy.
Hi, Guy. Hi, team. Morning, all. Actually, it's still just about morning. Couple of quick questions, please. I notice in your enterprise mobile business, the revenues grew quite a lot in the quarter. Can I put that down to ARPU, or is it handsets? And if it's ARPU, how are you managing to grow the ARPU given the customer base is flat? And our secondary point to Mark in particular, I note the BT Plus comments that many of the customers take a mobile, but clearly that suggests that it's a long way from all of them. Why do you think the conversion offer isn't necessarily, or conversion bundle isn't being taken up as aggressively as perhaps we might have expected? And are consumers using the BT Plus just as a way of fixing their price effectively for an 18-month period? Thank you.
Gary, how's your enterprise mobile business going?
Mm-hmm. I think the rise you're seeing is largely driven by the washout of roaming costs actually against it. So you were seeing the roam like home, slightly different dynamic in there. We are seeing a good movement on mobile, actually not as strong as I'd like, to be perfectly honest. So I mean, I think that's the key point in there for me, is mobile is trading in terms of ARPUs, it's not too bad. In terms of volume, I'd like to be a bit more out of it.
And on Plus?
On convergence, I think it's important to remember, Guy, there are two key convergent benefits. The first is the Keep Connected promise, so that's the 4G backup. And then the second are the mobile benefits that you get if you do buy mobile. There are, of course, a large number of customers, by the very nature of the mobile market, in contracts and not necessarily able at the point that they want to upgrade to Plus for the mobile benefits, able to port their numbers across. But we're seeing encouraging numbers already, as we've said, many taking the mobile products. Those that do take it, the households on Plus that take it, have a higher penetration of mobile than our average base, so that's encouraging as we start to build the connections in each family's home, and you know, the insight from those customers is very strong. So the key barrier really is those that are in contract with other providers, but of course, you know, when they move out of contract, you know, they're able to switch across to us.
Very good. And the last question goes to Steve Malcolm.
Wow, guys. Well, first of all, congratulations on your stamina. That's amazing. I've got three. The first two hopefully very quick, and the third is the most easy. First couple on first regulatory payments. I think you spent 52 million quid in the quarter. Is that the end of being consent? Can you just sort of update us on that? The second is the FTEs. You're actually up about 700 in the first half. Can you sort of help us understand the phasing of FTEs going through the transformation program? And I guess, you know, heading towards the high 90s by March 2021, whenever it is, that would be very helpful. Thanks. And finally, just on the sort of magical, mystical waters of 5G, there's an auction next year. Three, I know, Hutch has made a request for a variation to its spectrum holdings in the C-band. You have you know, quite a lot of spectrum in the 2.6, 2.7 area. Can you just sort of update us on in what you thought your sort of core holdings for 5G are? Is it that 125 megahertz and 2.6 with an OZFD? Do you think you need more in the C-band? You know, and what's your thinking on the three variation, the requested variation to build 100 megahertz in the C-band? That would be really helpful. Thanks a lot.
Very good. Well, I'm going to do this in reverse order and just talk about the spectrum, and I might get Howard just to chip in a little bit. CTO of the year, that would be Howard Watson.
Thank you.
I'm sure you've all seen that. So on spectrum, look, you know, we were happy with what we got in the auction in March. That allows us to launch 5G, and which, I, as I said, we've put the first masts in Canary Wharf, and we remain absolutely on track to launch in 2019. We're always on the lookout for more spectrum, I'm not going to go into the specifics about, you know, whether or not, you know, which band we're particularly keen on. I think that the general statement is, you know, we believe that network leadership, integrated network leadership, is critical to our strategy, and we'll continue to invest to make sure we have that. So Howard, I don't know whether there's any colour.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only two things I'd add to that, Gavin, is, you know, sub 6 gigahertz spectrum is a bit fragmented. You know, I think if that's going to be looked at, it absolutely needs to be looked at in the wider context by Ofcom and not on a specific MNO basis. And, you know, we do... absolutely, as you say, we have sufficient spectrum in the 3.5 gigahertz band to enable our 5G launch in the timelines that we've announced, and great progress with the technology as we're getting that rolled out and trialed and tested. But actually, you know, that auction that's potential, you know, that's coming up next year also has some interesting spectrum, particularly at the lower frequency bands as well. So we absolutely have an interest in that.
Howard, can I just check? Hello?
People and cost transformation?
Yep, sure. Well, there was also a question on the regulatory costs. Let me deal with the regulatory costs to start with, and you'll have noted that we took a net charge of $41 million in the first half related to regulatory matters. So this is, we have progressed, completed the majority of the compensation payments to CPs in relation to deemed consent, but not all of them. There are still some matters outstanding, one major CP with Openreach. But in addition to that, there have been a number of new claims. That's a normal part of our business we are assessing that have emerged in the first half as well. So it's the combination of those two that led to the net charge of $41 million. Turning then to your question on roles, the roles nudged up between half 1/18 and half 1/19, and that's the combination of two forces at work here. The first is that, as we said earlier, we are making good progress on our cost transformation and restructuring programs, and we have removed 2,000 gross roles from that program, very much in line with our program to deliver 13,000 reductions. But you'll remember that we also said that we would be investing in 6,000 or so roles, particularly in Openreach to support the Fiber First program, in our consumer business to improve further improve customer experience, and of course in security, where we also see opportunity. And those roles are more front-end loaded driving early value in the business, and therefore they nudge the total number of roles upwards. Obviously, the investment completes earlier, and we'll expect to see that then being offset in the later years as of the transformation program. So that's the dynamic on roles, Gavin.
Very good. And that is the end of the call. So thank you very much, and we'll see you again for Q3.
Mark, Gavin, all our speakers, thank you. That concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining, and have a good day.